Hello and welcome to the Ship Energy Podcast with me, Ariane Morrissey. This week, we're dissecting one of the core questions around shipping's energy transition: how governments can help fund the huge investments in ships, technologies, fuels, and supply chains that will be needed to reach net zero. This is a question that Rune Holman, head of maritime transport at Enova, has to tackle every day. For context, Enova is owned by the Norwegian Ministry of Climate and the Environment, and its mandate is precisely to allocate funds to support the country's transition to net zero. Enova has funded more than 900 maritime projects in the past 10 years, starting with the first fully electric ferries in the country, and more recently, vessels to be powered by ammonia and hydrogen. Welcome to the podcast, Rune.
Thank you very much, Ariane, for inviting me to the podcast.
Well, pleasure to have you with us today. I guess to begin, we're aware that there must be many competing demands for funding. So how do you actually prioritize and select the projects that do receive Enova support?
Well, we always look at our objective, which is to accelerate the market transformation to the net zero society in Norway. We help Norway to reach our climate commitments in 2030 and 2050. So my job in many ways, I like to say that, is to make Enova redundant. So in order to get to the net zero state that we want to be in 2050, we need to support value change and technologies that has a possibility to be viable without public support. We need to create some kind of lasting market change. And all our schemes or support programs or whatever you call it, they have an objective. And that could be to lower the costs of something like batteries, or it could be to establish a value chain, or it could be to lower the risks of adaptation of new technologies. So we evaluate the projects on this, how well they are helping Norway to reach those objectives. And we also do an evaluation project by project on factors normally like climate impact, innovation, long-term viability without public support, and quite important, the ability to follow through with the project. That is, we need to see that they have access to finance, they have to have the right personnel, a credible project plan, etc., etc. We do many of the same assessments as a private investor would do, actually.
And do you then make a conscious decision to support specifically ammonia projects or battery projects, for example, or do you remain technology agnostic in all that process?
We are technology agnostic. But on the other hand, we look at how the market is developing and what is possible to achieve in the market. But we see that definitely there is a need to create new value chains, because the fossil value chain will not be viable when we are talking about a net zero society. And we address the barriers for each. We try to look at the value chain for a new fuel or technology. Where are the barriers? And we try to use our funds where we can get as much effect as possible from our support. And that means that in some cases, we don't support the ships. For instance, with biofuels, there is no need to support the ships because you can use the same ships as you use today. But we need to support the production of biogas and liquid biofuels. In other value chains, like for battery electrification, you need actually both to support the charging stations and the vessels. To reduce the costs of the batteries, we try to increase the volume of batteries and create learning. But we also need some kind of infrastructure so that the ships can charge and be utilized as they are planned to be used.
And you mentioned that the projects you support, the aim is to make sure that they can bring the industry to net zero by 2050. Does that mean that projects that would reduce but not eliminate greenhouse gas emissions, or projects that would be based on fossil fuels or LNG, for example, wouldn't receive Enova support at this stage?
Yeah, a simple answer would be that you are perfectly correct. On the other hand, we are able to support new technology, and that could be technology that increases the energy efficiency. But then we are supporting just the installation of that technology on a fossil ship. And it has to be a new technology where you have some technological risks and where we can see that this technology may be used in other applications as well. Another example where we can support fossil ships is actually carbon capture. We have actually supported carbon capture on ships.
Then by definition, I understand that many, if not most of the projects that you're supporting are quite high risk. And we know that not all of those projects are going to be successful. So what level of risk are you able or willing to take with Enova's investments?
Well, we are in the de-risking business. So risk is what we are set up to manage. So we are perfectly comfortable with taking risks. When we provide a grant, it is a kind of a agreement between the Norwegian state, which is a good counterparty, and the company. They get this grant, and then they start to further develop the project, find the actual financing of it, find the wharf, the technology developers, the customers, and everything else. Sometimes they don't succeed, and the grant is cancelled. But that does not mean that we have lost the money, because we haven't allocated any funds to them yet. It's just an obligation to do that. We pay the money for after they start to develop the project, and they can give us the bills and show us that there's something happening. So we take a lot of risks, yeah.
So what's the proportion of projects then that don't reach a final investment decision, for example?
It depends on the value chain. And when it comes to battery electrification, the proportion is quite, I'm not really sure. I'm guessing now, but it would be in the vicinity of 10% or something like that, I guess. But when it comes to hydrogen and ammonia, where the technology is less mature and there's a lot more risks, well, it is above 50% so far. I'm getting more and more optimistic on that side as well.
And now I'd like us to look back a little bit, because Enova started funding maritime decarbonization projects in 2015. Have you been able to measure how much progress has been made on the energy transition thanks to those investments?
In 2015, when we started, there was one fully electrical ferry in Norway that was launched in 2015. That was looked upon as science fiction. Many actors in the industry, they were skeptical, afraid of fires. It was not possible to charge fast enough and everything like that. Batteries were not common at all. We started to support the ferries, not the ferries actually, we supported the charging stations. And that was enough for the municipalities to order electrical ferries. And now we see that around 45 of the ferries in Norway, they are fully electrical. And new, when the contract is running out now for the ferries, they are now demanding electrical ferries without support from us. And when it comes to the battery value chain, we started just to pump out support for hybrid vessels in order to create the value chains. And now we see that for in some segments, we don't need to support them anything anymore in order to see that they install hybrid vessels in the offshore sector and in the sea farming sector. They are using hybrid solutions without support from Enova. So there has been a huge change in the last decade. Also, I can say the same about shoreside electricity, where we know in Norway have over 100 harbors with shoreside electricity for that is electricity not for charging, but for harbor operations. We see that this market is starting to roll without the help from Enova. So we've seen some changes.
And is that synonymous with success then? Does that mean that you've succeeded, the fact that you're seeing the industry taking over without public money having to be involved in those projects?
It's always hard to be counterfactual in discussing history, but I'm strongly convinced that this wouldn't have happened as fast as we see now without the support from Enova. And our real results is not in the climate gas reduction from the projects that we are supporting. That is great as well, but that's not really what we are looking for. What we are looking for is to see that the market works without our support, as we see in the battery electric part of the maritime sector in Norway.
And now you've alluded to it, funding ships that can use new fuels is part of the equation, but that's not enough if we can't solve that chicken and egg problem, by which ship owners won't order new ships powered by new fuels unless they're sure there's going to be supply of those fuels. And on the other hand, fuel suppliers will not develop that kind of infrastructure unless they're sure that there's going to be off-takers for those products. So what is your approach to solving that chicken and egg problem? What is your approach to financing fuel production, bunkering, or even perhaps the purchase of fuel itself?
It's a huge challenge. I would like to use the example from hydrogen and ammonia, where we believe that you need to coordinate this effort. So we have supported several hubs and production sites for hydrogen around coastal Norway. And at the same time, we are pumping out support for vessels. But it's challenging because we see that some of the production sites, they are waiting for ships in order to make sure that they have a cash flow, and the ships, they need to be certain that the fuel is there. But we do both things at the same time, providing investment support to both the ships and onshore facilities for bunkering. But what we don't do is to provide operational support to lower the costs, because we believe that there is so much learning that the market has to do by itself. It is Jens Stoltenberg is being cited saying that the market is a great slave, but you shouldn't be a slave of the market. So you need to use the powers that the market represents in order to find the best solution, the best business models, and don't intervene too much into it from the governmental side.
So does that mean that you would not, for example, provide money to cover the price gap between conventional and alternative fuels, and why?
No, we don't do that because we believe that we have calculated a lot of calculations with assumptions, of course, but we have some more or less real data because we have a lot of data from the projects that have been approaching us. And we saw that it was possible with investment support to produce at a level that is on par with the fossil fuels when it comes to hydrogen.
And now the funds that Enova has available has increased in recent years. I understand that you now have $1 billion to distribute annually. So how does the share of funding allocated to maritime compare to other sectors? And do you think it's enough given the scale of the challenge?
Well, I should be careful with discussing if it is enough. That is something that I will leave to the politicians. But we spend something like one-fourth, one-third of Enova's funds on the maritime sector, even though if you go to Statistics Norway, you see that the maritime sector only represents 8.4% of the climate gas emissions of Norway in their statistics. On the other hand, Norway is, the eighth biggest nation in the maritime sector in the world, with a population of 5.5 million. So it's a huge part of the Norwegian economy. And we have a complete ecosystem in Norway. We have ship owners, technology developers, wharves. We have lawyers, financing, etc. And we believe that by being first in Norway and taking a role as a leader in the green transition, we can develop technologies and solutions that will have a global impact as we go forward. So that's one of the reasons for us being able to use so much of our funds on the maritime sector.
And interesting what you're saying, because obviously we hear public finances around the world are feeling the squeeze, really. So what makes you think that the kind of investment that you're making in decarbonization is a good use of taxpayer money? And what are the views on that in Norway?
I guess we have the same discussions here as we have elsewhere around the world. The world is changing and there are a lot of other prioritizations that the politicians have to do. Norway is in a particular situation when it comes to governmental financing, so that probably helps a bit. But I believe that you shouldn't underestimate the push now towards the net zero world in 2050. We are not alone having a climate law stating that we are going to go there. The EU is pushing forward with ETS, the quota system. Maritime sector is a part of that. We have Fuel EU Maritime. We have IMO, which probably will adopt stricter regulations in this fall. So there's so much happening now. And I believe that if Norway will continue to have the lead in developing these technologies, we actually may gain an advantage when the market is there, when the carbon price is so high and the regulations are so strict, that there will be a huge market that will open up for green solutions and technologies. So it could be worthwhile in the future.
So you think that's going to pay off in the long term?
I believe so, yeah.
Now, where do you see the industry going next in terms of the transition to net zero? And what kind of projects are you looking to fund as a priority going forward?
Well, I'm quite technology agnostic, as said earlier. I see some changes, though, when it comes to batteries. I'm surprised every time we have rounds of applications. When you get a new round of applications, I see that the ships, they are just bigger and bigger, and they are sailing longer and longer, fully electrical on batteries. The last ship, which was made public a few days ago, was 120 meters long, and it is going to sail from Norway to continental Europe without anything else than batteries. Hopefully they will succeed, and I see no reason why not. So is it possible to sail deep sea from, for instance, Norway to the US just on batteries, using energy efficiency technologies as maybe sails at one point in the future? Maybe you have to go a bit slower, but nevertheless, I don't know. I'm surprised all the time, so I believe that I will be surprised in the coming years as well on how far that technology could go. But I don't know. Will hydrogen be used? Will ammonia be used? I see that there's a lot of activity on both those fuels. Methanol, I'm curious about. We need to find a way to produce methanol cheaply enough in order to solve that. CCS, it works actually. It works. Carbon capture works on board ships. But then again, you need some kind of infrastructure to handle the CO2. But that is slowly starting to be rolled out as well. I believe you will see different solutions as you actually have today, because there is not just one fuel that is used. And you also have nuclear. We have been discussing with projects that are looking at nuclear propulsion. They are a bit too early for us to support. We are not supporting early phase technology development and research, supporting when they come to a later stage with their technology development. But who knows? Who knows?
And what would be your response to some people in the industry, including some Norwegian ship owners, who claim that there's currently too much focus on new fuels and not enough on existing low-hanging fruit technology to improve energy efficiency?
Well, one thing is for certain. We need to replace the fossil value chain. We just have to accept that. Of course, CCS could be an alternative, but that's the only alternative. But that's challenging as well. Energy efficiency measures just on fossil fuel chips won't solve the issue. When that is said, energy efficiency measures are crucial because the new fuels are going to be more expensive than fossil fuels. So we are very positive to energy efficiency. And we are supporting that when we are supporting zero emission ships, we are always, more or less always, also supporting some kind of energy efficiency measures. And new technology for energy efficiency, we are very happy to support those projects.
But is it the argument in some way that if those low-hanging fruit can pay for themselves through return on investment and fuel savings, it doesn't necessarily need support from Enova?
We don't support projects that have a net positive net present value, where you make money on them. We only support projects and help them to reach a positive investment decision. And that is an issue that we see sometimes when somebody comes to us with energy efficiency measures. They are actually profitable, so they should do it without governmental support. Another issue with if we did support a lot of energy efficient measures on fossil ships, we could risk to delay the real hard work, which is to develop the new value chains.
Which makes me wonder, actually, what is the right balance of public versus private investment? So what role do you see for government funding? And at what point should the industry really foot the bill itself?
Well, the right balance is zero governmental support. But in the meantime, as there are market failures present, there is some need for governmental support. But I hope that we'll see a future in the future that the part that is the governmental support will just diminish in the future until we reach zero, where carbon prices and regulations have taken over as the main driver.
And to finish, what learnings can you share with other countries that are currently looking at how they can best support the energy transition and maritime? And to what extent can other countries that don't have the same levels of funding available still make a difference?
I will be careful to say too much about what other countries can learn from Norway, because we are in a particular situation, as I said, when it comes to governmental funding. And there are so many differences when it comes to business culture and everything around that as well. So I have probably a lot to learn from other countries as well. But I think that if you start early and think systematically and accept that this takes time, setbacks will happen. The market goes up and down and sentiment changes all the time. I started in 1993 writing my master's thesis on fuel cells, hydrogen fuel cells. And since that, I've been through several ups and downs when it comes to hydrogen. I think we have reached the top now, and maybe we are on the way down. But be there, and try to analyze the value chain, because even small targeted interventions may unlock some private investments if you're wise about it. And sometimes it's about getting the right actors to talk together and address something where they find business models and help them do that. That can just unlock the way that they are thinking today. So collaboration is important. Listen to the market and try to learn from them what are their real issues, but don't do everything that they are saying because they just want more money. And that's great, and that's the way they should think. But yeah.
Thank you very much, René.
Thank you.